Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
iZotope and Native Instruments have teamed up to create the start-to-finish bundle that home recording guitar nerds have been waiting for. Plus, you, dear listener, get an extra 10% off with Guitar Nerds by using discount code NERDS10 at the checkout on iZotope.com. From the creative spark to the final touch, their new bundles include pretty much everything you could possibly need, which is great because it's far too easy to sink hundreds of pounds and a big chunk of your time into just picking up random plugins. The Music Production Suite 4.1 and Complete 13 bundle contains over 30 intelligent mixing, mastering and repair plugins, 65 premium instruments, 20 plus expansions and over 35,000 sounds. And if that's a bit basic for you, they've also bundled Music Production Suite 4.1 with Complete 13 Ultimate, which gives you everything that makes Complete 13 incredible, plus a colossal library of added synths, sampled instruments and effects, 115 plus premium instruments and effects, 39 native instruments expansions and over 65,000 sounds. Whew. It sounds like a lot. It is. It's very good, very comprehensive. And as we've come to expect from iZotope, it's very good value. If you're looking to get into home recording, I cannot recommend it more highly. And if you're already into home recording, it really is the one-stop shop for making what you do sound better. This podcast is entirely treated and produced using iZotope plugins, and Native Instruments have been responsible for almost every synth or sample you've heard on our Guitar Nerds jingles. Check out their great new bundles on iZotope.com or follow links in the description of this podcast and use discount code NERDS10 at the checkout for 10% off anything in the iZotope arsenal. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Brandt, and joined this week by Matt Knight.
Hello, Mr. Geo.
And from the 40 Watt Podcast, Mr. Philip Carter.
What's up, nerds?
Exactly. What's up indeed? Well, it's lovely to have you on an episode, Philip. It's been too long. So I don't know why I haven't thought to have you on an episode yet. Thank you so much for joining us.
No, I'm so happy to be here. You know, it's been a lot of fun. I've been a listener for a long time, even before I started my podcast. So being on here is full circle a little bit.
Yes, exactly. Well, dear listener, I'm sure you are aware of the 40 Watt Podcast, because it is absolutely fantastic. The content you create, Philip, is excellent. You're a fantastic host. So, you know, dear listener, do go and check out the 40 Watt Podcast if you haven't already.
Yeah.
It's super.
You can find it everywhere.
Exactly. All the podcasting places that you can find normal podcast things. Anyway, this week, now that we've got Philip on, we've got Matt on. Matt went to the London International Guitar Show. I don't know why it's called the London International Guitar Show. It doesn't make any sense. It's a tiny guitar show that happens in a race course in Kempton, which is, you know, the arse end of London that it's not easy for anyone to get to anywhere in the country. It's very
weird. I think
weird.
It's still technically in London, isn't it? But yeah, even it took me an hour and a half. You know, and I...
There was nothing international about it. Nothing.
No, I mean, I technically live, like, not that many miles away 15 miles in. It took me an hour and a half. Well, that would have taken me an hour to drive, which is ridiculous, but that's London for you.
Yes, yeah. Well, we're gonna talk about that because Matt's going to check out some bits and bobs. He's bringing some of his favourite bits to the table, so we'll all talk about that. I also want to talk a lot about Philip's guitars. If dear listener, you're not aware of Mr. Carter's taste in instruments, it is impeccable, and he has some wonderful things. Of course, he joins me and other podcast hosts like Blake in owning a Grez, so we're definitely going to talk about that.
One of the best guitars I've ever played.
Well, exactly. We're going to have a look at what's in the watch list, although, dear listener, we're going to do a bit of a special this week, and we're going to see what's in Philip Carter's watch list. So I'm looking forward to seeing what that is. I imagine that's all we're going to do this week, dear listener. I imagine we'll be talking about some of Matt's guitars. We'll be talking about Philip's guitars, so I doubt we'll get round to the news. Bit of a weird muted news. I'm just looking at what I've put in like news of the week this week, and I have the new 110 Supro and the Vegatrem VT2.
Vega trim.
Why did I say yeah?
Because it's all lumped together like that.
Like Vegenais.
I just quickly on the subject of trems, I've seen a few adverts recently for a new trem system called the Virtual Jeff. Have you seen Virtual Jeff?
Matt, the what? This, you are losing your mind, Matt. We spoke about this.
Did we talk about podcast. Virtual Jeff?
It was in Gear of the Year whenever it came
no,
out.
No, it wasn't.
The Virtual Jeff Pro.
Was it?
Explain to the dear listeners and to Philip what the Virtual Jeff is.
As my boss would say, I've been asleep since then. The Virtual Jeff is exactly what you'd expect. It's a man called Jeff. He's virtual. No, it is basically a virtual whammy bar for your guitar that doesn't require any sort of like replacement of what's already there. It sits behind a hardtail bridge, and then it plugs into a box, and the box is basically a kind of whammy, and you program it to do what you want.
It's a Digitech whammy, but instead of having the foot pedal controller, the rocker thing, you've got the controller in the form of a tremolo, Bluetooth connected or wirelessly connected in some way to your guitar.
I thought Virtual Jeff was, you know, virtually a joke until actually I watched some more videos and then was kind of like, actually, maybe I want Virtual Jeff.
Does it sound ridiculous?
Good?
It's so ridiculous, like I've never even listened to a demo.
The thing is, it sort of sounds like a whammy, but I like the idea of having it on a whammy bar.
Right.
Do you know, it sort of makes perfect sense. I think the problem is with all of these products is they can look bloody ugly.
They look ridiculous. I'm glad you said it. Oh my gosh.
Is that your take on this, Philip?
That's my take.
A ridiculous product.
Look, I realize that I am a millennial with boomer tastes in guitars.
Aren't we like, all?
This is like, it's so ludicrous. It's right up there with like the MIDI pickups and stuff like that. But I'm like, I understand the function. I get it, but I hate it. I hate it so much. Yeah.
I sort of hate it, but then I saw people using it, and I was like,
yeah, that's the problem.
I could use it. I don't know whether... No, it sort of... It doesn't... Does it have MIDI out? Because I was thinking, like, it would be kind of cool. I mean, this is... I mean, Joe's going to hate me for this. But I was reading an article featuring his favourite band of all time, Muse. And I was thinking about Matt Bellamy Manson with the Chaos Pad. And then I was reading Guitar Player magazine from a couple months ago, where they're interviewing Jack White. And obviously, Joe, we've talked about the kind of crazy three pickup and these kind of guitars. And it just got me thinking about like the ridiculous things he's done to his guitars. And I was thinking about the Triple Graph, which is obviously his pedal with the up and the down octaves.
Made with copper sounds.
Yep.
Yeah, and I was just like, I don't know.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
But, you know, what was interesting was I haven't listened to a lot of his new records, but on his pedal board is a Miku. And he's like, oh, yeah, I used it on this. I used it on this track. And I listened to the track and I was like, oh, it's just pretty good. Because you can sort of tell, but you sort of can't. You wouldn't know if he hadn't have said. But then you can kind of hear it. And I was like, actually, are all of these products ridiculous? And then it just takes one person to use it to go, oh, yeah.
I don't know if Jack White's lost his edge. The Dead Weather for me is perfect music. That is a perfect band making perfect music. I'm not sure he's
playing
come
perfect
close.
Guitars as well. Yeah, you know, because he does play. I think his main guitar for that was the Billy Bow Jupiter.
For me, it was
Raconteurs. I was really into the White Stripes. I got really, really into them. Like, so same. I'm from Mississippi. For listeners that don't know, I'm from Mississippi in the U.S. and blues music's really, really big to me, and I love the fact that the White Stripes came together, he and Meg came together to cover Robert Johnson tunes and then became the White Stripes. I love that you got to see in a band the evolution of rock and roll all at once, like the way it happened, like all over again. But
so
like,
well put.
Yeah, but Raconteurs was like, to me, it was like the perfect evolution of that raw rock and roll sound that he had. But so that was the end. Like, Dead Weather's good. I enjoy it, but I really loved that Raconteurs sound.
Does it? Wow, there you go, Matt. There you go. There's the solution. Yeah, I love Raconteurs as well. Don't get me wrong. They're fantastic. They share a bass player, obviously, as well, between Dead Weather and Raconteurs. They were a great band as well. It was just the fuzz work in the Dead Weather is just unbelievable. If you like fuzz, dear listener, you must listen to all three albums by the Dead Weather. It's just an exercise in insane fuzz sound. What was the name of the second guitarist in the Raconteurs?
I don't remember.
I always found him maybe played it a little bit too safe for me.
Okay.
But they were still fantastic. It was just Jack White was so sloppy and edgy, and the other guy was just a little bit clean, a little bit like, you know, when a session player plays blues.
Brendan Benson.
They don't want to play the wrong, they don't want to mess up. They don't want to have the note that they missed, you know, or played badly, you know, whereas Jack White will keep in all of that stuff.
Yeah.
All the bad takes.
That's what I love about him is that he was just very much the vibe was more important than perfection.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. Well, I mean, dear listener, if you like the Beatles, Philip, are you a Beatles fan?
I do like the Beatles. I never got like real deep. Everybody's always like, oh, it's you're either a Beatles or an Elvis person.
Elvis is from Mississippi.
Yeah. That's a big U.S. thing. Beatles or Elvis. I grew up in Mississippi, so I chose Elvis. But I do really like the Beatles. But I never if you name a tune, I'm not going to remember exactly what most of those are. I'm going to have to go listen to it again. I'm like, oh, yeah, I know this tone.
Mm. Yeah, it's Beatles or Rolling Stones over here for obvious reasons.
No, Rolling Stones every day.
I'm a huge Rolling Stones fan. But if you want to talk about great sloppy guitar work, the Revolver Super Deluxe came out on Spotify, dear listener, this week. It's very, very good. So it includes all of the sessions, you know, the alternative takes for songs, and of course, you know, they're never playing to a click or anything, so there are ones where they get to into it and speed up and it's just way more rock and roll. They've also included things like the backing tracks to some of the songs where you get to hear just how sloppy George Harrison's guitar is a lot of the time, but how his guitar tone is just, I know they were just recording as good as they could make it sound, and today that would be a lo-fi way of a lo-fi tone to aim for. It's so brittle and so raucous, and it's just... It's crazy to think that they were a pop band, you know, back then. When you hear George Harrison's tone on Revolver, it's great. It's worth a listen for fans of good guitar tone, I would say. But you've got to be also a fan of sloppy guitar playing, because it is very sloppy.
Well, as someone who declares Jeff Beck as his favorite guitar player of all time, I love sloppy guitar playing.
Well, there you go. So. The perfect example of a sloppy guitarist. Anyway, that was a good segue. Oh, fun. But we shall talk about some guitar stuff. Philip, we should familiarize our listeners with you and your guitar collection. But first, why don't we do a what's in the watch list? We've sort of done, me and Matt have done this on and off for the last few weeks, showing you, dear listener, interesting things that we found in our reverb search. In our reverb watch list, rather. So, Philip, what have you got? What fun, cool things should people be looking out for that you're checking out on Reverb at the moment?
So, it's funny, when we started talking about this, I said, okay, what's in my watch list that I won't be devastated if somebody buys it before I can?
That's always the trick, isn't it? I definitely have two watch lists, one that's appropriate for the show and one that I'm keeping to myself.
Exactly. I've got a couple of those where I was like, I went by them. I'm like, nope, I'm not mentioning that. Not mentioning that. So there's a... There's one that I watched because I owned a pedal by this company at one time, and I stupidly sold it because obviously I thought I needed something else, just like all of us do. And it's a company out of Korea called Mulan. Now, I'm going to spell that because it's not like the Disney film. It's Moollon. And they make... they make really great high-end basses. David Landreth from Brothers Landreth plays one. He's the artist I know of. There's a bunch of others that play him, though. But they make these really, really rad pedals in these acid-etched enclosures that have incredible art, which, because let's be honest, the most important thing about gear is what it looks like. And so... But they're great circuits. I had the Delay, which has this acid-etched butterfly and wording, and it's just super cool. So I keep a search going all the time for those, for them to... Because in the U.S., they're underappreciated. Nobody really knows what they are. Right. So you'll see them go for ridiculously low prices. They are top-notch circuits. They're incredible pedals.
Yeah.
So I'm looking for those all the time. They make a really good octave fuzz.
Oh, yes. Well, I'm looking at the Lotus Octa at the moment. It has top-mounted controls, so all the extra room on the front for the incredible sort of Lotus artwork that they've got on that pedal.
That's a great looking. That's a great looking pedal.
It is. Yeah.
And sorry, Joe. I was going to say this brand have been around for a very, very long time because. When Philip mentioned it, I was like, I've got a story about those. So they used to be. For UK listeners, some of you may remember, there used to be a massive guitar show in the UK called, I think it was called Music Live, and it used to be at the Birmingham NEC, which is like a big arena, basically. It used to be like the UK's equivalent of NAMM. We don't have that anymore. In fact, there's not many shows anywhere that are like that. You know, probably it was bigger than, I remember it being bigger than Guitar Summit, like a huge, huge show. And, you know, when I went for the first time, this was probably like 20 years ago, there wasn't that many brands. Obviously, the boutique, I remember seeing my first Keeley modded pedal there, the all-seeing iMod DS1. I remember seeing Zvex for pretty much the first time. I knew they existed because of Matt Bellamy and that kind of thing. And then I saw that brand, and I never saw them again. I never saw them in any shops. You know, and I saw them that brand that I always sort of knew that existed. It wasn't until recently that I remember seeing one come up for sale secondhand. I was like, I remember that brand. So I assumed they never took off, but obviously they've been going ever since.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm looking on Reverb right now, and other than I've got my search set to everywhere, I think there's one in the US for you, Philip, that I found, the Fuzz 14.
Yes, I was going to mention that one. That's an incredible silicon fuzz face circuit.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
Excellent. Exactly my flavor of fuzz. And then everything else seems to be in the Republic of Korea or France or Italy. But, you know, nothing. Oh, the one in Argentina. But that's
They make a great looking wah pedal that's that chrome enclosure with the acid etching. There's a few of those in the US right now. I missed out on one that went for $100.
Oh my god. Cuz the one being sold I assume new out of Korea is £326. So
yeah.
Whatever that's $400.
$360.
Mm. But I guess for you in the US, you know, one thing I always see from other, you know, guitar people in that side of the world is like Craigslist. We just don't have anything like that anymore. We kind of have Gumtree, but there's never anything on there.
But Craigslist is an adventure, Matt. Craigslist.
I know. We just have nothing like that. And we don't really have like pawn shops the same either.
Yeah, but y'all have, what do y'all call them? You call them,
Cash converters,
that's it.
Yeah,
that's
they are. You know, you get the cheapest, crappiest nylon strung guitar and a few secondhand Behringer pedals.
Matt, we found that early 60s Vox AC30 we did. In that cash
converter. And there was that vintage 59p bass that was literally like bass, bad condition or something like that. And you're like, what?
Well, you've so got weird. You have the full pawn shop experience then. Because so when I was in college or university, as y'all say in the UK, I made my spare money by buying gear in pawn shops and flipping it. So like I spent, I don't know, 8-9 years where literally my income was whatever I could find because I was gigging too at the time as much as I could. But you know, you got to play a lot of $100 and $125 a night gigs to pay rent.
Yeah.
And to pay bills. So I was also, whenever I'd go, you know, I did Southeast, mostly Mississippi. So whenever I'd go to a town for a gig, I'd go a little early and go to as many pawn shops as I could to see what I could find that was underpriced and buy and flip it. But it is the same experience. The majority of the things you see are not the good affordable imports, like the stuff literally nobody wants. I'm in Mississippi, so there's lots of PV in pawn shops.
Really? Is that PV's big in Mississippi?
Yeah, well, they started in Meridian, Mississippi, which is about an hour and a half from me. I've actually sat around and gotten drunk with Hartley Peavy.
Really? Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, he's a fun guy. He's very much an inventor. And so for those that have been kind of critical of the way the business has been run over the last few years, it's because Hartley's not a business guy. He's bad at that.
Right.
He's just not. He's a very creative guy, though. So, like, I sat around and just talked about, you know, guitar and music with Hartley Peavy. His dad was a musician, so that's how he got into it. But yeah, they started in Meridian, Mississippi. And so there's a lot of PV in the pawn shops here, which some of it's great.
Of course. But if you get older stuff,
it's also bad.
Well, true. The older PV stuff is you know, as good as it can get. Also, I hope you get a lot of those the auto-tune guitar, because that was awesome.
We don't get a lot of... I haven't seen a lot of those just in general, just period. I don't think a lot of them were made.
Every now and again, I try to buy one, and the only ones I can find are overpriced because I think people know that I'm looking for one. Nothing on Reverb at the moment. So recently, Guitar Nerd switched to using Lewitt microphones, specifically the LCT440 condenser mic. Now, this mic is super affordable and very versatile. It's what I'm using right now. In fact, there are a bunch of videos from independent studio engineers with way more audio know-how than me comparing the LCT440 to mics three times its value, and it absolutely holding up. Plus, this mic is as good for instrument capture as it is for podcasting, as it is for vocals, which is great because I don't like messing around with mics, and I can literally use this for everything. The proof is in the pudding, though. So here is my Tweed Blues Junior, recorded at a reasonable room volume using nothing but the Lewitt LCT440. Nothing has been added in post, no compressors or EQs. This is exactly how the Lewitt LCT440 captures the sound of Fender's greatest amplifier. Thank you.
sounds absolutely pucker. The 440 captures all of the depth and the character of the Blues Junior, and all I had to do was move it over the other side of the office and pop it in front of the amp. So if you're doing anything with home studio vibes, I strongly recommend this wonderful and affordable microphone. Check it out at lewitt-audio.com.
Yeah. So, yeah, but like, it's funny because, you know, I used to run sound at a blues club in Clarksdale, Mississippi. It's also the club I played the most. And we'd get, you know, touring blues guys, like international touring blues guys to come through and local blues guys. And some of the best tones I've ever heard were a Squire guitar into a Peavey Bandit. And no lie, like, they absolutely killed it.
Absolutely underrated guitar amp, the Peavey Bandit. But that's it. As soon as anything that's Class AB, if you can pop an EQ in front of something that's Class AB, you probably can make a good amp. It's just, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And the Bandit was a solid state, and it's just, it sounded great. It if you use it right, that's the thing, is like, people try to make them something they're not. You learn do what they do. Don't try to make it, like, if you buy a Bandit and you want to sound like a Marshall Plexi, you know, good luck. You're never going to sound like that.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Well, they are very good. But let's talk about your guitar collection, because as you said, you're a millennial with boomer guitar taste. Yes. Excellent guitar taste, I will add, because of course you, me, and Blake all own Gres Mendocinos.
Yes. So
I think you might have probably nailed the best one, Matt. I don't know if you know what Philips Gres Mendocino is.
I do not. Wow. Hit me.
Let's talk about that. I'm going to pick it up. Not that y'all can see me, but So back in 2020, I used one of the stimulus checks that went out here in the U.S. To buy a Dan Electro baritone, and that was your fault. Just letting y'all know, that was your fault, Joe. Y'all talked about it over and over again. I was like, well, now I have to have one. So I bought one.
Great.
And
guitar.
It's a great guitar. It's a great scale because it can be both a bass six or a baritone.
Yeah.
But then Phoebe Bridgers smashed one on Saturday Night Live.
Right.
And the price, they all sold out and the price skyrocketed. And I was like, I could hold on to this, or I could make $350, like, on what I paid for it. So I was like, I'm going to sell this. And so I went without. Well, I had Barry on the podcast, and you and Blake talked so highly of them, and some other people I talked to talked so highly, and I really like Barry. Barry's one of the nicest people I've met in this industry, and this is an industry full of nice people. Yeah. And so I was like, you know what? I want one of his guitars, and I need a baritone. I'm going to buy one of his baritones. So I placed the order with him, and we got to talking about finish. We spent about an hour and a half on the phone talking about it. And I was like, I had this Dan Electro. I love that silver, that black sparkle finish that they do. And he was like, well, I do a sparkle. I can do that. And so we did this really rad black sparkle with silver and just a little bit of blue sparkle in it. So when, like, stage lights hit it, reflects just a little bit of blue back as well.
Absolutely amazing.
Yeah. And it is one of the best playing, best sounding guitars I've ever picked up in my life. I may just be permanently a baritone player and be okay with that. I've been tuning all my guitars down a little bit over the years as I get, you know, older, and I play, and the style I play is evolving, and my voice is, I'm getting older, so I can't sing the high notes like I used to either. So I've been tuning down. My normal tuning is now D standard. So.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, same.
Yeah. Yeah, I play in D. I think D standard sounds incredible on every guitar, and I think it should be the standard tuning for guitars.
It just gives you don't really lose that much up top, and you gain this lovely earthy low end that you don't otherwise have. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I ordered it. It came in rather quickly. And Barry is doing, and this is going to sound like an advert for Barry over Gres Guitars, but let me just tell you, like, he does the reclaimed redwood for the tops. All his guitars are semi-hollow. Well, you can order a solid body, but most of them are semi-hollow with a one-piece carved Honduran back, Honduran mahogany. And it's not book matched. It's not anything like that. It's one piece. And it's just the most resonant, cool guitar that I own. And I own a bunch of cool guitars.
You do.
Embarrassingly so.
So what are cool. you? Like what it. Are you tuning it to?
That one's in B2B.
That one's B2B. Oh, very mm-hmm. nice. Very nice. And of course, Blake also has a baritone Gres Mendocino. In fact, mm-hmm. I'm the only one who's gone for a standard tuning, but I'm making up for it because I just purchased and fit a set of 13 to 56 flat wounds onto my Gres Mendocino, and it has made it the greatest thing in the world. It's in I don't know what is it, but C sharp standard, I guess. No, sure. not C. No, it's D standard. No, it's half a. It's half a step down from D standard, and so then D flat, and then drop D'd. So.
Oh, so
drop C sharped.
Yeah, drop. Yeah, no, drop C flatted.
That
so
it, that's that
B
one, yeah.
sharp. B. No, it's B. It's B. The yeah. lowest string is B, but the rest of it's in D flat standard.
That's correct. Yes.
Okay.
It's yeah, great.
Well, you know, I messed up. I'm going to tell you I messed up. And that doesn't mean like the guitar is not amazing. But I think I mentioned in the group recently, you were talking about, you posted the picture of your 175 that you sold.
Oh, yeah.
Which, you know, you weren't using it. I understand. Barry makes jazz archtops.
Mm. Yeah.
He makes incredible jazz archtops. So I've already started to like plan my next Gres because I know that I want a jazz archtop real, real bad.
I think that was the one that when we've talked about them on the podcast, they're the ones I was like, well, if I was going to order one, I would probably have one of those.
The guy just nails traditional build quality, that sort of thing. He just nails it. There's nothing, he's not trying to do anything else. There's no there's no quirks that are making it, you know, modern or like, you know, a classic guitar's looks with modern sensibility. There's none of that. It is just a great classic instrument. Mm.
I think Working Class Music, the YouTube channel with Jason and Tia, they reviewed a baritone Gres Mendocino, and their take was, this is the, I'm trying to paraphrase them because I can't remember the exact words, but they said, this is the best guitar I've ever touched. and both of them work in guitar retail, so
it's
Barry is doing something special, and the listeners, you need to get on board before he is back ordered by years.
That is very well put. You absolutely do, because he will be. Let's talk about some of your other guitars. You got some great guitars. You got your Junior. Did you get that recently? I can't remember.
Yeah. I've been wanting a Les Paul Junior for a while now. And just the right situation came across for me to get one, which meant that they had the right financing option. So, listeners, I don't recommend going into debt for musical instruments. But if somebody will give you zero interest and you know you can pay it off, do that. So, I picked up a Junior. I was fully prepared to get it in and send it back if I hated it. Like, it was one of those things where I'm going to be picky. And it was good. It was, I like it a whole bunch. And then it took me a little while to, I was like, okay, I'm going to give it a good go before I decide I'm sending this back. Cause it came in and it was pretty good. Well, it's taken me a while to find the right strings because there's the wraparound bridge that changes the tension. So I can't use the same gauge that I normally use on a 24 3/4. I had to really find the right strings for it and get it down to D standard. And once I did that, it's just a great guitar. Opens up. One pickup's all you need.
Especially when it's a Gibson P90. They're just such great all-rounders.
And I'll tell you what, I'm a Gibson, I'm unabashedly a Gibson fanboy. I love Gibson guitars. I also love Fender. You don't have to choose. You can like them both. You can like them both. And I've had a bunch of Gibson P90 guitars over the years. Nothing truly vintage, so I can't really speak to that. I've played a bunch of vintage guitars, but I never owned one. The current line of Gibson pickups may be the best pickups they've ever made.
Right. Really? Wow. That's high praise. Considering, I think that's almost an unpopular opinion at the moment. Gibson are going through this state at the moment where no one thinks that what they're doing at the moment is the best it's ever been.
And that's where I wholly disagree. I've played a bunch of the new Gibsons. And this is now, this is spoken with some Gibson colored glasses on. But I think I'm pretty good at detaching myself and just recognizing, you know, a bad guitar.
Yeah.
Gibson guitars right now, on average, are better than any guitar they made in the 50s and 60s today. They're better. And I've played, I don't know, I've played 7 or 8 Bursts. I've played a bunch of vintage Gibson guitars. The guitars they're making today are better.
Yeah. Yeah, I do not disagree at all. I also absolutely love Gibson guitars. I haven't owned enough Gibson guitars. You know, I think this is a mistake I've made in my life. It went through that big stage of like being really into the, you know, the Japanese sort of late 70s, 80s copies of Gibsons. And I think that kind of has made up the bulk of my owning Gibson style guitars. Other than the ES-175, I owned an ES Les Paul bass for a little while.
Ooh, yeah.
That was very good. And there's been a few other random bits and bobs, but really not enough. Not enough. I don't think I have ever owned a Gibson Les Paul.
Really? Like, it's just a standard Gibson Les Paul?
Exactly. I've never owned one, even though I've had, like, countless Tokais and Grecos and Bernies and even an
Orville. All great guitars.
You know, but I've never actually had a Gibson. Let's talk about, like, the rest of your... So pick out some great bits, because I assume you obviously must have some great Les Pauls.
Sure. I am going to put a Gibson guitar on your radar, though, if you're not familiar with them. Have you tried a Gibson Midtown bass?
The Midtowns.
Yeah, the Midtowns. So that was the flat top kind of 335, but it was a sort of offset 335. A bit like the Les Paul Studio, which the guitar, the Les Paul Studio, had that sort of offset 335 shape to it. And the do I mean Studio? What do I mean when I say?
I think you mean the Signature.
I mean Signature.
The one you're thinking of is the one they used for the Jack Cassidy bass. That was an Epiphone, which was the offset. But the Midtown bass is actually more like a 339, the smaller bodied 335. And so it is a flat top though. Pickup. It's got that wonderful mud bucker in the neck.
Perfect pickup.
Yeah, which is a great pickup. But it's also got a great mini hum-sized bridge pickup.
Yeah.
I think they're really rad basses. I know you're into semi-hollow basses as well. I love them. I don't own one right now. Actually, that's another thing that's in my watch list is the Gibson Midtown, because they typically go for really affordable prices used.
It's not a classic Gibson. That's why. Yeah. They people underprice them because of that.
I'm looking at one right now on Reverb in Pelham Blue for $999.
That's $1,000.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
They were the basses we couldn't shift at GAC, weren't they?
Don't we always talk about... I'm just going to have a look, because we always talk about... No, I'm thinking of the Vegas. Do you remember? I always come back to the Gibson Vegas High Roller, which was the pink burst. A similar thing with a flat top. I don't remember them again. Midtowns, those sort of things. They were just, I think, as you said, they just weren't a Les Paul or an SG.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's realistically. That's the way it
actually, they were great guitars. They were great guitars, and the basses were very, very cool.
You can still get a 339 for a ridiculously low price, considering the earliest ones of those were made in the custom shop. They're not custom shop instruments. They don't advertise them as custom shop instruments, but they've got the label on the back of the headstock. They're custom shop instruments, because that's just where they made the original 339s, and they go for super affordable money for an American-made Gibson.
Yeah, so unfair.
Yeah. So you asked about other guitars. I'll give a couple of highlights, because I do have way too many guitars for someone who's not gigging like they used to. But I'll tell you a brand that needs to be on everyone's radar is Cower. If you know Doug Cower, I've got a Banshee and a Super Chief, and both of those guitars. The Banshee is the Firebird perfected. It is It is super comfortable to play and a super cheap if you can find one. Order one. I realize the price point on these guitars, listeners. I'm so sorry.
Was the Banshee the one you were after, Matt? Last week we were talking about. What's the one that you want?
No, we were talking about the Super Chief.
Oh yeah. Mm.
We're talking about the Super Chief. That's the one. Actually, Anderton's had a purple one, a three pickup purple one recently. But yeah, as I say, shouldn't put yourself in debt for guitars.
I bought mine, so I sold Joe. I sold my SVT and
your SVT 10. Micro. Oh no, okay.
No. I kept the micro. I love that thing.
Thank goodness. Actually, that thing's, I bought that's amazing.
I bought that because it sounded so good and was able to sell my big SVT because I didn't need it. So I sold my, big St. Louis made SVT head, classic head, and I sold my 810 and the 410 I had. I had way too much. I gigged those for a while, and now I'm not embarrassed. I'm not sad they're gone. They sounded great, but oh my gosh, the work. I sold that, and like immediately after selling, the way these things happen, someone posted locally to me a Super Chief at a price that was almost the exact amount of money I got for the SVT. And so I was like, that's where that money's going. And so it's all black with a black guard, gold hardware, which I normally hate, but it looks great on this guitar. It's just a monster of a guitar.
Very nice. And with the pin striping.
Yes, around the pick guard. Yeah.
It's a very good guitar.
Yeah, and like I said, embarrassment of riches. It's one of those things where I talk about people, they either come into my studio space and, or we just talk about guitars. And I'm like, do you have one of everything? I'm like, no, but it's close and it's embarrassing. But it's like, also, I know what I could go down to. Like, I gigged for 10 years with two guitars and an amp. And that was it. That's what I had. And a small pedal board with like four pedals on it. So it's like, this is an embarrassment of riches. somebody messed up and gave me an adult job with adult money. It was a bad decision on somebody's part.
I see. So we've got the Cow. The Cow is fantastic. Mm-hmm. The Junior, the Grez. Talk to me about some other highlights or another.
So, I have one that's I've got a couple of got a couple of Strats just like everybody should. I've got a couple of Telecasters, but one nobody's probably heard of. I have what's called a LaRose, LaRose. And it's his, is it called a Hollow Man or a Hollow Boy? I can't remember. There's a picture up on my Instagram. If you scroll back far enough, I'll try to remember to post a picture of it when this episode airs so that people can go to my Instagram at 40 Watt Podcast. That's 40, not the word 40. They can see what it looks like, but it's a smaller bodied, semi-hollow, flame maple. Like, this guy uses the best wood I've ever seen, because his other gig besides building guitars is he sells wood to boutique guitar builders. So he gets like the select woods. Let's see. It's got
Is this the one with the PRS like lower horn?
Yes, it is. So it's got, it's sort of PRS-ish lower horn. It's double bound, except when it gets, so the upper front is bound. Then when you get about halfway down, it goes into a German carve.
It's got a little bit of everything.
Yeah. And the binding is the most insane thing I've ever seen. So it's double bound, but each binding is doubled. So it's first bound in tortoiseshell and then bound in cream. So it's got both. It's the most ludicrous guitar. It's way flashier than I normally like. Spoken as someone who is not a PRS fan, no offense, Paul. But the guitars just don't speak to me. But this one did. This one absolutely did. And in a way that I can't explain. It's got a Bigsby, like every good guitar with a trim should. LaRose guitars, check them out. If you check them out on Instagram, they mostly post pictures of wood. That's what he posts. So, so that's the highlights. I've got a couple of like, I've got the guitar I've owned the longest, which is a Gibson ES-135. I've got a 137 custom I bought only because the P90s and the 135 were noisy in some clubs I would play. So I needed something that didn't just buzz to all heaven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is an incredible collection. I love that we're only just on the tip of the iceberg of you know, your fantastic guitars and gear setup. I'm sure.
Oh, Joe, I've got one that I didn't even mention. This one, I've got an original Harmony Rebel
With the sliders.
Yes, with the sliders. That guitar, so I bought that from Fanny's Music in Nashville, where they had removed the original vibrato tailpiece, which was trash. Let's be honest, it was trash. It was whatever scrap metal they could find to put on that guitar. They replaced it with a working Bigsby. They did all the setup work on it, fret dress. I think they refretted it, got all the electronics working great. And now, what an incredible guitar.
Yeah. It is very cool. The shape of those is just amazing. I love that I love the way the horns are slightly offset from each other. It's just, there's a flow to the body shape that's just gorgeous. I think they are great looking guitars. I love the F-holes on them. They're almost like a single line, like no bit of them gets wider, you know, like a normal... wait, that's a bad description. It's just a weird F-hole. Let's leave it at that.
Yeah, yeah. They're not your typical Gibson F-hole.
Yeah.
They're really, really incredible. I like quirky guitars. Like, I've had Les Pauls. I started this year with two Les Paul standards, and today I have none. So it's just one of those things where it's like, a Les Paul's great. It is, but I like something that's just a little different, a little quirky, a little oddball. So, like, Les Paul Junior is good. I guess they're getting to be more popular and more common, but I like something that's a little left of center. It's why I have a 137 custom instead of a 335, even though I love 335s. Everybody's got one.
Yeah. 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 Yes, a very good point. Everyone does. I think I fall into that. I like things to be quite safe. I like the 335 for being that that normal thing, but you're absolutely right for kind of looking for something a little bit quirkier.
It's
nice to be able to find those from the big guys like Gibson as well.
Yeah, which is it, if you hunt, and they're usually more affordable.
Exactly. That's the best part. The best part. Now, Matt, we did say we'll talk some about the London International Guitar Show. I wonder if we're going to mention some brands maybe that we're introducing to Philip for the first time, potentially. We'll see. We'll see what's about. Because I imagine a lot of what you came across was UK luthiers and things like that.
Well, I was going to start with a couple of pedals and a couple of amps, actually. And then
How was the show in general?
It was very busy. It's the first guitar show I've been to since Birmingham Guitar Show 2020.
Oh, blimey.
I think. Yeah. Yeah, we've done a couple of other events through work, but yeah, guitar show. They said this was the biggest one with the most stalls. It felt very busy. There was a big queue waiting to get in at 10 o'clock. A lot of secondhand stuff.
Why I love that show. If you go to that show with a couple of grand, you will come away with something fantastic.
Yeah,
I realize that's a lot of money to take to a show, didn't it? I just mean they have great vintage stuff. You know,
There was like ATB were there. They're like obviously one of the really big vintage dealers in the UK. I think they had two 1960 Les Pauls. They were like $300,000 each.
Yeah, you should, Philip, you should check out ATB guitars. I mean, obviously, I appreciate when it comes to vintage Gibson and Fender stuff, you know, you have your spoils of it over there. But ATB are fantastic at finding just really exceptional pieces and then charging far too much money for them.
I think that's the shop. If I'm not mistaken, I think Dan and Mick from that pedal show did an episode from there.
Yes, they did.
So, yeah, I've been aware of them since that episode. And, yeah, it's one of those things where it's I really, really appreciate the shops in the UK, and I follow a bunch of them on YouTube and Instagram. But it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, it's cheaper for me to get those vintage American guitars here than over there.
Although, is it? You know, with the terrible pound, you actually...
Well, don't get me wrong. I look a lot more lately. I look a whole lot more lately. Because right now, the pound to dollar ratio is well in my favor.
Oh, so. Yeah.
No, I mean, it was... it's cool. And it's cool seeing all that stuff. But, you know, you kind of just look at it and you go, oh, wow. And then you're sort of like, okay, cool. It didn't excite me as much as it used to. Yeah. Like seeing a 1960 Fiesta Red Strat or whatever, just kind of a bit like, eh. But I guess it's over the last year or so, Joe, we've talked about so many other cool brands and great guitars that are way less money, you know. Yeah. So yeah, it was very cool them being there.
But ATB, they are selling a trio of Gibson Heritage Series Carina guitars. So the Modern, the Flying V, and the Explorer, you buy them as a set of all three for £32,500.
I think it's just, it's, you know, there's some stuff there. It was crazy money. Interestingly, lots of... Strat Pluses, the guitar of my dreams with the three lace sensors. Quite a few there, a couple that caught my eye.
Good money or too much?
So Matt,
money?
I know you've been like a big lace sensor fan because I listen to the podcast, but it's funny that you're talking about the Strat Pluses because that's what my sister plays. That's her main guitar, is a 90s Strat Plus that she has played. We found again after it was stolen. We found it in a pawn shop. It's like, oh, wow. That's her guitar that she adores. It's a black one with a... I think it's got the red, blue, and gold lace sensors in it.
Yep.
It's got that trio.
Yeah,
yeah. What an incredible guitar. So I know some players in the US that specifically only play the Strat Plus. It's such a rad guitar.
Yeah, they're really cool. And actually, they started going for like silly money, and they've sort of settled at like $1,500, I guess.
That's not awful.
No, you know, for what they are, there was a particular... So I used to have a mid-90s one, so that had the rollerball nut, which was the better of the nuts, and then it was the kind of lockable bridge, but it wasn't like a Floyd Rose. So it had like, really good tuning stability with locking machine heads. It was like... I don't know if they called that the Deluxe. But yeah, there was a couple of bits there. There were some cool basses there. You know, I guess less of the... kind of, I guess we would say Woolworth guitars, you know, for the UK, but I guess like the cheap, was it Sears guitars. There was like less
Woolworth
of that
was a
there.
Thing here too, so right, we had those as well.
Yeah, so less of those kind of cheap 60s catalog guitars that you kind of saw everywhere at one point. Right. Lots of more modern stuff at like fairly high secondhand prices, I think, where for the longest time, secondhand guitars were really expensive because of the demand of guitar playing in general over the last 2 years and across like the pandemic. So yeah, there was a lot of that on the ground floor, Joe. And there was a couple of brands that we've seen before and we've talked about before, like Feline Guitars, Flame Guitars, who we've met before. There's a couple of other brands downstairs. Lots of secondhand stuff and a kind of a lot of stuff that... sounds awful, really, but once you've seen sort of like one vintage Strat or one vintage Les Paul, you sort of tune out because you're just like, I'm not going to spend $50,000 or $20,000 or $10,000.
Yeah, I mean, that's so why I had to stop bringing the Guitar Nerds Limited company card to those things.
Yeah, you just, you know, and I kind of think, I don't know, I think the only thing, actually, maybe it was more that I was upset at one particular thing, which was there was quite a few 1960s, especially 1961 and a 1963 SG Juniors.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
And they're about $5,000 now. And I part X'd mine for £1,500
At what point was 1,500 quid the going rate for that?
Yeah, so
Not that long ago, unfortunately.
It was part exchange, so obviously you're never going to get as much as... But I think that store sold it... I think they sold it for like two, three. I mean, it had a neck break at some point, but it was a really, really cool guitar. But ultimately, wasn't playing it, didn't get on with the way it played, so... It was kind of pointless keeping it. Part exchange that for my 58 custom shop Les Paul, which I then ultimately sold and then bought my Nick Huber. So, you know, what comes around...
No, Huber guitars are amazing, so that's not a bad move.
And that's kind of worth what the, you know, they are now. There was quite a lot of cool jazzers. So, like, hollow bodies, 175s.
That's my dream guitar.
I mean, I still want like a 125. There's the kind of more of the studenty ones. And
I was gonna say, I used to have a blues player named Eli Paperboy Reed. He spent some time in Clarksdale, my hometown, and in the early 2000s he told me multiple times, he's like, dude, buy a 125, buy a 125, because they were dirt freaking cheap in the early 2000s. I'm talking like you could find a 125, like a 50s 125 for $700.
Oh my
$600 bucks. And he was like, buy a 125. So he bought a couple of them, and now I'm looking at the money they're drawing, and I'm like, why didn't I listen to him?
Man.
I've even messaged him recently. I'm like, I should have listened to you.
Yeah.
Who was the fella who popularized them? What's his name? James Bay, is that right?
Oh, yeah, he did play those, didn't he?
Yeah.
I can't remember if it was a 125 he was playing. Is it the 125? Yeah, because the 125's not got the cutaway, but then they did a 125 with the cutaway, with the thin body. Maybe it was something different. But yeah, no, they're super cool. And actually, you mentioned Robert Johnson earlier. One Stand did have a L1 circa like 19... I think they said it was anywhere between 1908 and 1927.
What?
They
couldn't one. That's it.
They couldn't pick. They couldn't. It said like 1908 to like 1927. I don't think they could pinpoint the exact date. But yeah, they had the L1. I was like, God, you know what would look great? A virtual Jeff. You know, just stick a virtual Jeff right on the front of that.
God, I would murder you. Yeah, I would absolutely murder you.
So there was some cool stuff. I mean, I guess the brand that, you know, sticking on Archtops, the brand that stuck out for me from that was a brand I've only seen being played by Tom Quayle in the UK, but he didn't necessarily play one of these models, which was Fibonacci guitars. They just made incredible looking Archtops. But what was really cool is they made like these tiny bodied, like, Archtop jazzers, and they're just like, oh, they're just amazing guitars. One of those guitars that I was like, I would absolutely love to have one because it's amazing. That you could tell they are really well built, you know, played amazing, sounded amazing. I'm just not good enough to play one. I'm sort of looking at it going, yeah, I would literally never do that guitar justice.
It's a certain type of player's guitar. They look unbelievable quality-wise. I love the pickups you can get on some of them. They look like the early 60s Gibson pickups that you were getting on, like, the SG basses. But, like, guitar, like the black humbuckers with the pole pieces. They're very cool.
Yeah. No, very, very, very cool. So, and there was a lot of other brands there, but just... quickly on some sort of guitars and amps, I guess there's a couple of highlights.
I want to mention, I know, like, with the podcast, because with my own podcast, we normally don't mention prices because those are so subject to change. Yeah. But on the Fibonacci guitars, like, I made the mistake of looking at their price list.
Oh no, what is that? You've talked to me about it.
And it's pretty stinking good.
Oh, really? Like, oh, right.
They do a and I'm going to use the terms I know, right? They make a 335 style with a single pickup, single floating pickup that starts at $34.99.
This guitar, I mean, that's obviously a chunk of money, but
it is a lot of money.
These guitars look like, I wouldn't have been surprised if it was starting at six.
Yeah. Right. I would have totally expected like 5-6 as a starting point for. Okay, so they make another one. It's their Diablo. It's their single cutaway with the sort of like, I don't know, flowing F-hole. It's not like an F-hole. It's like this.
It's very modern F-hole, but it's still, it still looks good. It's carried very well.
Starts at $24.99.
What?
Yeah, starts at $24.99. They do one that they call the Californian. That's the single cutaway, rounded cutaway with a single pickup. That's very like archtop jazz inspired. Starts at $30.99.
These are much better prices than I was expecting.
Right, they're still super expensive. Like I understand. Like, unfortunately, as I've gotten older, like my idea of what a budget guitar is has changed a lot. But I sort of expect a. Like you look at like Gibson and even Fender, we can talk about the American Vintage series or whatever they're calling the new Vintage Pros or whatever. You know, $2,500 feels like the entry point for even a mass produced, pro level instrument.
If you want it to, if you want a classic Fender now, as in if you want them to make something that's kind of reissue-y, then and you want it to be American, then you are looking at over $2,000 now.
Yeah, which is absolutely so $3,000 for a handmade small company, small builder doesn't feel unreasonable.
No, I think very reasonable for what you're getting here. Obviously expensive, dear listener, with not being guitar stops, but what I guess I mean is with the sort of woods used, the look of these guitars, obviously the build quality, there are plenty of people out there doing exactly this for $5,000 plus. So,
same. Yeah. See the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, even if you do the Fender mod shop now in the UK, like most of the options come out at like $2,000.
Most of the time, all you're doing is changing the color on something that you can buy standard.
Right. Yeah. So they were great guitars. So I guess with the time we've got, let's jump into a couple of other bits. So yeah, first for me, as I'm sure many people know, I run two amps into one cab, and my favorite amp of the last 10 years has been the Morgan PR12, which is effectively a Princeton with a couple of mods, just absolutely amazing. And I've been searching for another amp to pair with it in that kind of similar vein without kind of having two of the same thing. And I came across this brand called Emprise, Emprize, amplification out of York, I think they were in the UK, just making these absolutely amazing point-to-point hand-wired amplifiers. And the one that caught my eye was the Mirage. So the Mirage, totally hand-built, point-to-point wiring, basically a two-channel 18-watt EL84 amplifier with two channels. That kind of are based on the AC30 top boost channels. Super simple. But the great thing about this is it had so you've the clean channels volume tone, the rhythm channel was volume based treble, and then it had power scaling that then went from 18 watts to 0.1 of a watt, but it was a variable power scale.
Oh, like on a rotary. Oh.
No, like a normal pot. There was no like notches or anything like that.
Great.
So what you're saying, this is the AC Vox style version of your Morgan.
Exactly. and I was like, I think that looked absolutely, I mean, everything that they made, the whole bunch of amazing amps you have to go and check out on the website. The other one that stood out for me was the Falcon. So the Falcon is based on a pre-CBS like Fender Black Panel Deluxe, but it had a bunch of additional front switches for things like depth. You obviously had like obviously reverb and trem on there. I'm trying to get a better picture of the front panel. So you had a level control, a bright switch, a mid shift, and a dwell switch for the reverb as well. So some really nice tweaks. And you can actually order it with a whole bunch of speaker options as well. Although he did say that he would basically do any of his amps in any like chassis. So I was like, oh, you've got me thinking. But I really like the idea of the Mirage. I really like the idea of two channels, and then like super simple. But he made some great kind of plexi style things. And Joe, you will dig the one thing he made, which I nearly bought it when I was there, because I was like, I just thought it looked so cool. He makes two amps, but the one he had there is called the Mini, which is a 5-watt single 6V6 amp, completely point-to-point wiring, just volume and tone, speaker out, and just like a great mini amp for like home use.
Yes.
And he was like, oh, if you like this, then you'll also like the bigger version I make, which is still a mini amp, but just slightly bigger. And that was the Huxby. So the Huxby is a two-channel version of the same thing. So it's a 12-watt 2 6V6 power amp with two channels, both just volume and tone.
Oh my God, I love it. I love it.
And you could just have this
on your desktop. You could just have this sit on top of your interface and have this permanently plumbed into your setup and always sound like
great. When I came home and saw that on the website, I was like, I wish I'd had one there, because I would have loved to have seen it. I mean, the mini one itself was so well built. It was so cool. And I've always had a fascination with those kind of mini amps. But 5 watts, you know, 5 watts is still pretty damn loud.
Fine.
Yeah. But the 12 watt, I was like, oh, then that way you've got a rhythm channel, you've got a clean channel. And the great thing is, like you say, Joe, for on desktop, you've actually got a separate input for each. So if you want the lead channel and a bit more gain, you go into the lead. If you want a bit more of a kind of clean or rhythm sound, just go into the rhythm channel.
I love that.
So I'll tell you with their amps. First of all, the Mirage broke my brain because it's a Vox style circuit in a very Fender style amp like presentation. It looks like a blonde brown panel amplifier. And so it broke my brain. But I'm looking at these and I'm like, I don't know. And because of the pound to dollar exchange rate, I'm like, point to point wired. This may be something I really need to look at, because there's nobody else. There's no one in the U.S. making an amp like these at that price point. Because honestly, I can get some of these better than the PCB reissue Fender prices.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, yeah, super impressed. Do obviously their website. I mean, they made a 5-watt kind of champ with tremolo. They did a 5-watt version with reverb as well. They did a 12-watt Princeton, an 18-watt deluxe, a 14-watt Princeton with reverb. They did a 22-watt deluxe. Just a whole bunch of cool stuff in a bunch of Tolex options, all the way down to kind of the Mirage.
They've got an 18-watt super lead starting at 1049.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the prices, again, the prices are amazing. That Mirage head was, I think it's $1,299 on the website. The one I think he had at the show was maybe starting at $999.
Whoa.
And I was like, I'm in. That would look so nice on top of, I've actually got a cab in exactly the same Tolex. So I'm like,
it was made for it. You gotta go get it now.
I know. But absolutely amazing. Definitely gonna reach out, because I like the idea of having the kind of the Vox and the Fender kind of running in stereo. So yeah, Emprise amps, super cool, worth checking out.
Yeah.
And then Joe, should I talk about one effect before we round off?
So let's talk about one effect. It'd be great to have an effects pedal in this week's podcast. And then Matt, Philip, dear listener, we're going to head over to the Patreon after that, and we're going to talk about some other things, because there are a couple of other. We're going to have almost got through everything that was. You're like, I must talk about these in this list.
Yes,
there's so much more stuff that was there that would be great to talk about. So we'll do that in the Patreon. But yeah, to talk about an effect pedal, sounds like it was a very guitar heavy show.
It was very guitar heavy. A lot of effects pedals upstairs. A lot of new effects brands, which is always good to see. And a lot of people doing new things. So I will talk about Bleak District Electric.
I have never heard of this company.
So Bleak District out of the Peak District, kind of a relatively new company. He had his 100th ever pedal there. Has quite a few different ones in the range, but there was one that really caught my eye, which was, I mean, Joe, you would absolutely love this. And I could tell you now, Polymath needs this pedal. So the Anti-Static is their Velcro gated CMOS fuzz with a micro looper in a kind of mini format.
What?
So basically you've got an on-off switch, which turns the whole thing on and off, and then a volume control for the fuzz. So the fuzz is kind of just set, but it was like perfectly dialed in. And then you have a micro looper and two switches, and the switches are range. So I think it went from like 4 milliseconds to like 40 milliseconds on short range, and on long range it went from like 100 milliseconds to like 3 seconds, and it's an always listening looper. And then when you hit the button, it latches into wherever you've set the time control, which is the knob in the middle, and then you can move that time control and it will stretch the audio quicker or faster depending on where you move the control. And if you put it in latch mode, it will just, you can then take your foot off and then it will just constantly repeat that. But because it's always listening, it's not like you've got a loop, a section, you just hit on it and it's already grabbed a section of audio depending on where you've set that time control in the middle, and then you can just mess around with it. It was
awesome. That this wonderful looping idea is coupled with fuzz just makes this fantastic.
I'm really sorry, but I've forgotten the person's name, but I'm sure when we send you this podcast, when you listen to it, you'll remind us. But he was like, oh no, I've just got here and I haven't had a chance to set up, and one of the strings are broken on his, he had like a Strat which he'd modded to just have one single coil in the middle, so he'd put a new plate on it, so it was just like a single coil in the middle. It was missing a string, and he got headphones plugged into a Katana Mini. And even with all of that and the noise being next to an amp booth that were just like cranking everything, it still sounded amazing. So
you can't buy anything, it's all sold out in his shop.
I think he said like more is coming, but yes, obviously with a lot of the people there, a lot of the small brands, it's not their full-time job,
of course.
He was hoping to do more. But what was also cool was that the company he was using, he was like going for that you know, like a lot of craft beer cans now have that kind of rough like finish, like wrapped around the can kind of like muted color design,
grippy texture.
They were very much like that, which I thought was very, very cool. The Anti-Static from Bleak District Electric.
I think I want one of everything he does. He does the Rec Head as well, which is like a cassette tape modulator, you know.
That was also very, very cool, because that was rather than things like the Chase Bliss generation loss, which is very much like your audio is constantly being processed. This was like a dynamic lo-fi kind of thing. So you'd effectively set what you wanted it to sound like, and it would only sound like it when you like hit the strings at a certain sensitivity. So you could be playing arpeggios and it kind of, maybe if you plucked one or two notes a bit harder, it would like wobble in and out, and then as you played chords it would literally be like you were stopping and starting a tape.
Amazing.
It was wicked. It really sounded like a badly recorded cassette in a good way, but only when you wanted it to, because of the sensitivity control, which is something I've not really seen. So again, I thought that was a really, really cool idea, and it looked great as well. All of his stuff looked really, really
also
good.
His prices are incredible for what
yes absolutely. Wow. I mean, how you know, again, how people, I mean, it's not their full-time job, but to put all that effort in and then still only charge that money.
The Anti-Static is £139.
Yeah.
What? Yeah. It is disappointing, though. The only thing in stock on his shop is his t-shirts. So.
Yeah. Well, damn.
Yeah. Okay. But very, very cool.
I'm getting straight in touch. I'm going to see if we can get one of everything to mess around with, because, they look fantastic. Well, on that note, dear listener, that is all the time we've got on this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. So Matt, Philip and me are going to head over to our Patreon, patreon.com/guitarnerds. And we're going to talk more about some of the guitars that we've seen at the show. Maybe we'll do a question. I don't know. I don't think we'll have time. We'll see. We'll see, dear listener. Plectrums have been sent out to people, you know, so don't forget if we do. I'm not following up on this, so you need to get hold of me, dear listener. If we ask one of your, we answer one of your questions, get in touch with me, like DM me on, or get in contact with me via the internet in some way, and I'll send you some free Gravity Guitar Nerds plectrums. Now, you can become a Patreon supporter for as little as $1 a month. At the dollar tier, you'll get this episode ad-free and early every week. $5 gets you access to our Patreon special episode and our back catalogue. $10 gets you a lot, plus I'll sing you my thanks at the end of every episode. With Blink-182 getting back together, I am making everything punk pop at the moment. That's how I'm theming all the music for Guitar Nerds. So be a punk pop song at the end of every week's episode. You can find us on all your favorite social media platforms. Join the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook to get involved in our weekly episode discussion. Thank you for listening. Philip, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Yeah, happy to be here. It's a blast.
It has been very good. I've very much enjoyed it. Now, of course, dear listener, you can check out the 40 Watt podcast as well on any good podcast streaming platform. It's a very good, very super informative podcast by a man with excellent taste in guitars. And check them out on Instagram, 40 Watt Podcast. Always the number, not the letter. What main social avenues do you like people using for it?
So my main ones, we've got a group on Facebook that's a small community. So come on over there. Instagram, I'm pretty active on. I try to post and react to things every day. And we have a Discord server that we're pretty active in. So all that stuff, if you go to the website, 40wattpodcast.com, or if you want to go to our link tree, linktr.ee/40wattpodcast, you can find all the links for that there.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, on that note, thank you for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Bye. Adios.
Anton Fryant and Barry Gresbick, Steve Davis, Danny Walker, Jorrit Brown, Andy Hoffler, Holly Simpson, John Conway, Russell Healing, Paul True, Peter Pesh, Ty Allen, Yogi the Guitarist, Sean Hughes, Brian Hansen, Eric Emmer, Jeffrey Wax, Brian Einsler, Gavin Van der Linden, Andy Manley, Marty Zau, Katowacki, Simon Milbourne and Stuart Robson, Eric File, Joe Prattick, James Dorr, Abe Matthews, Titopia, The Band, Russ Edwards, Stephen Burke, Dave Lee, Jake Gray,